Peter's warming up here. So I am, my name is Randy Silva. I get to do the lesson every once in a while. I enjoy doing it. Like I tell Chester, I always have one up my sleeve. Well, short sleeves today, but. Yeah. And the computer is still warming up. Our first verse, why don't we get started while my computer warms up. Oh, there's the mouse. That's weird. Aha. I got it. There it is. Okay. This is going to be a little different message than I normally give, hopefully. I titled it Adventures with God. Adventures with God. And, you know, I was supposed to preach last Sunday, but it snowed, and they canceled it. And I took it personally. But I thought, it's got to be a reason for it, right? So I didn't redo the lesson, but I tweaked it. Yes, I tweaked it a little bit. And it didn't get canceled, so this must be the right one, right? Okay. So Adventures with God. I want to start with, we all want comfort. Don't we all want comfort? Yeah. Sleeping in, hanging out on the couch. We got a massage chair for Christmas. Just sitting there. Comfort. Genesis chapter 3, verse 19. You guys can turn there, or the scripture's up there. It says, by the sweat of your brow, you will eat your food. So Adam and Eve had been kicked out of the garden, but they were in the garden before that, and everything was supplied for them. They just had to do a little gardening, that's all. So that must have been comfortable, right? The temperature must have been just right, because they were naked, right? I'm thinking it was warm, probably 80s. Surrounded by all this fruit that you can just eat whenever you want. But it didn't last very long. We don't know how long it lasted. They messed up and they were kicked out of the garden, and then things changed. It changed to, by the sweat of your brow, you will eat your food. And it continues to this day. We don't have that many farmers nowadays, but all of us, we go to work, we maintain our households, we scratch and claw to survive. And really, all the way up until very recently, like in the last maybe 100 years, 50 years, it really was scratching and clawing to live, just to live. But over the centuries, you know, you have the Renaissance and you have more technology, and then you go through the 80s, you get more machinery, the Industrial Revolution. And, you know, we're, as a species, we're ingenuitive and we are always striving to make things more comfortable, right? Before we had to go to the bathroom outside, hey, why don't we do it inside with a little toilet that flushes? Well, inside in its own room. Comfort. Now we go to the grocery store. There's all these deli meats prepared. The shelves are stocked. We go to Starbucks or our favorite coffee shop. And there's like literally a million different ways you can have your coffee. Half calf, low calf, no calf. Skim milk, soy milk, almond milk, milk. So more and more our basic needs are met. And I put in here that are unearned until later in childhood. And then even after, as adults, they're still earned. You still have to go out there and make a living. But it's still easier than it used to be. And as far as being unearned, you know, it's There's a song from a group called Paramore called Ain't It Fun. And it talks about, ain't it fun to be kicked out and live on your own and have to work for everything. So it's sarcastic, ain't it fun. It's a culture shock. It's a shock to your life when you first move out and live on your own. I remember when I first lived on my own, I didn't realize nobody was going to do my laundry. And it just occurred to me, I got to do my laundry. It was a shock. But, you know, we had the machines. I didn't have to go out to the river, scrub it with the board. It was still easier than it used to be, right? I put here that when you grow up without scarcity, it produces codependency. So I was dependent on my mommy to do my laundry and for a lot of other things. And scarcity is what used to drive, you know, we didn't have enough food. So if you wanted to eat, you had to get out there and farm. If there was a drought, wow, there was a big problem. I mean, people could die. If there was war, definitely. People are dying. It's just hard, right? But more and more, we're moving towards societies that are less scarce. There's more resources. There's water, there's food, there's shelter. And it produces codependency in that you now depend on that technology. You know, so if, let's say, the coronavirus, you know, ends up killing the farmers or something, what do we do? I don't know how to dig a hole and put a seed in it. It's more complicated than that. I don't know how to do that. I mean, even one of our technologies branches just suddenly went away, cell phones, yeah, we'd be messed up, right? We'd be in a world of hurt. There was this college study that was done about students' anger. I don't know if you've seen I've seen some YouTube thing. I haven't been on campus in a while, but I've seen some YouTube things of just like kind of protesting, that kind of a thing. But there's just it seems like there's a lot of anger. Even with women in colleges. And the study was talking about that it stemmed from it's an insecurity. You go from being totally sheltered in this umbrella of protection, and then you end up in college, and who's going to protect me? The college better protect me. Society better protect me. And if it doesn't, well, then I'm going to scream for it to protect me, just like you might scream at your parents or something. And you'd think that, I mean, we're trying to move towards this idea of utopia, where all of our needs are met. We just get to sit around in our massage chairs, kind of like that movie WALL-E. Remember, and our bones don't even connect anymore. We just kind of loaf around. You'd think that that's, you know, you move towards, you want to go to utopia, but instead you get dysfunction. Things start to break down. There was these experiments done in the 60s called the Mouse Utopia Experiment, or at least that's what we call them nowadays. And basically the scientists wanted to know if you put this community of mice together and gave them all of their needs met, all the food, shelter, warmth, whatever they need, water, everything's met, what would happen? So it's a mouse utopia. It got bad quick. They were like eating each other. They no longer had kids. They would just sit and quiver. It was weird. Now you could say we're a little more advanced than mice, but I'm not sure how much. I see a lot of quivering nowadays. All right, so consequences of abundance, or a lack of scarcity, you could say as well. You can turn over, if you want, to 1 Kings chapter 12. This is a really interesting passage. It's one of those you could kind of just pass over if you wanted to. But the whole story is interesting. But just to, you know, to focus on one thing, it's about Rehoboam. Now, Rehoboam was the son of Solomon, and Solomon, of course, was the son of David. And during the time, the kingdom of David, Israel got rich. They had gold and silver. It says in the scriptures that it was like silver was just, common. There was just so much wealth. And Solomon was raised under that. And then with all that wealth towards the end of David's kingship, that's when they were able to build the temple. And the temple was amazing, right? It had gold everywhere, and it was just decked out. And so then Rehoboam, Solomon's son, grows up under this. And then Solomon, of course, passes away, and Rehoboam becomes king. And there's this whole thing with this other guy named Jeroboam. But at any rate, they come back into verse 13, and it says, So with Jeroboam, the people came up to Rehoboam and said, hey, how are you going to lead us? Because towards the end, Solomon was really kind of slave driving us. It was getting to be kind of hard. And we'd like you to back off a little bit. So Rehoboam's like, I wonder how I should do this. So he goes to the elders at the time and gets advice. And the elders are like, you really need to give the people some comfort. You really need to back off a little bit. But then he goes to his young friends, and they're like, whip them. Okay, so here are the verses. The king answered the people harshly, rejecting the advice given him by the elders. He followed the advice of the young men and said, my father made your yoke heavy. I will make it even heavier. My father scourged you with whips. I will scourge you with scorpions. And that's worse, by the way. So why didn't Rehoboam follow the advice? Why did he follow the advice of the peers, and why did he not follow the advice of the elders? Why would he do that? He says he's this young, strapping young man. He goes to the elders, which seems like a good idea, right? Get some advice. But he totally disregards it. He goes to his peers, his friends that he grew up with, his college buddies, we'll say. I don't know if they had college back then, but. And he takes their advice. Why would he do that? I have a question to the campus and teens, usually over here, right? How do you feel when an adult tells you, you don't know anything? How do you feel? Feel good, don't you? Yes, sir, may I have another? Do you think to yourself, you're right, I don't know anything yet. I'm going to school and someday I will know stuff like you. Funny thing is, one day when you do know stuff, you'll be talking to the younger people saying, you don't know anything. When I was younger, I thought I knew stuff. I didn't know anything. There's this weird dynamic as you grow up. And I am looking back at the past distantly, more distant than it used to be. And nobody at any time, I don't think, thinks to themselves, I don't know anything. You always think that you got things going on for the most part. Maybe as a really young kid, maybe not. But even so, a lot of times, right, even five-year-olds, kindergartners, whatever, they kind of think they know what's going on. Why is that? But then there's so much more you have to learn. It's not that you don't know anything. It's not that you just only know a small part of it, I guess you'd say. Why is that? Well, one thing is biology. You can't buck science, right? It has to do with the development of the mind. You know, the mind is the most incredible invention by God. It's so complicated. There are certain things that have to develop just for survival, right, when you're a kid. But then there's this complexity. I mean, society is complex. Whether you live in the 1800s or now or whatever, whether it's scarcity or not, society is complex. And there's a lot to learn. And there's this these ideas, these studies that talk about that until you're around 25, which is older than I even thought, that one of the last stages of your mind's development is the ability to predict the future, the ability to predict consequences. I mean, you ever ask a kid, why did you do that? Oh. I mean, even as a teenager, you ask, why did you drive like that? I don't know. You think to yourself, it's like, okay, you do A, you're going to get B. Why didn't you connect those two dots? You think it's just because the person's just not thinking, you know? Or they're not, you know, they're just looking for one thing and then they get something else. But it actually has more to do with just the inability to do it. The inability to predict one's consequences, the consequences of one's actions. Then, of course, there's just plain old experience. It just takes time to build experience. So going back to the biology thing, so you can think of this Rehoboam, he was younger than 25, and so he didn't really even have the ability. I'm sure he was thinking hard as he's got this new responsibility of being king. How am I going to do this? How am I going to, which advice am I going to take? What's going to be best for the country? And in his mind, he came up with, let's beat him harder. He also didn't have the experiences, right? So his father would have been older. He would have seen sometimes maybe when he was lenient, when he was harsh or whatever. And then he would have these experiences to draw on. And when he went to the elders, that's what he was getting. He was drawing on the experience of the elders. Another thing I put on here is upbringing. Parents always want things to be better for their kids than what they had. It's like in our programming or something like that. Parents always want it better and easier. And Solomon and Rehoboam and his friends, they were growing up in this time of just wealth. And I'm sure they got like trained for war or something like that, you know, battle, how to use a sword or bow and arrow or something. But nevertheless, they still were just in comfort. They had the best foods. They had all their needs met. And so you could say they were very privileged kids. And this was the best they could come up with. Let's beat them more with scorpions. One of the guys I've listened to in the past and just a great psychologist is Jordan Peterson. He has these things called the 12 Rules for Life. Rule number 6 is set your house in order before you criticize the world. And it's so easy to criticize the world. It's so easy to think, I know better. I know what society needs to change. Let's change it and see what happens. But you don't realize just all the cogs and the intricacies and the nuances of society. It's hard enough just to predict what's going to happen. But with something so complicated, you make some little changes and everything just flies off the rails. That's why you have this idea of liberal and conservative, not just in a political sense, but just liberal meaning progressive. You want to make changes. And conservative saying, hey, I don't know about that. You have this battle going on because you do need to make some changes, but you have this battle going on. And the idea here is that you should at least have your own stuff together before you go out and criticize and try to make changes to the world. It seems like a good idea to me. You can turn over to Hebrews chapter 12. Side effects of training. Now, this is an interesting verse. You can turn over to it if you want. But it says here, endure hardship as discipline. God is treating you as children. For what children are not disciplined by their father? If you are not disciplined and everyone undergoes discipline, then you are not legitimate, not true sons and daughters at all. So life is hard. It's getting easier, as we're saying, with all the technology and stuff. But we still have to endure hardships. Now, this particular verse I put in here, paideia, that's the Greek word that's here. It's translated as discipline. When I think of discipline, I think of you did something wrong. You need to be corrected, and then you can go on your right way. Discipline. Whereas I think of training is you want to do something differently. You want to be better, and maybe you're not even sure what it is, but you just want to be better. So you go through training, and sure enough, you get trained. You don't necessarily go through training just because you did something wrong. You're going through training just to improve yourself. So the question is, which word is used should be used here? Discipline or training? It's the same word. So if you know, like 2 Timothy 3:16, about the Bible's useful for training, it's the same word. But there it's not Bible's useful for discipline. It's useful for training. So what's going on here? Well, the translators of the Bible chose discipline because this whole idea of just the context of the verse. It talks about sin and correction and things like that. But I really think training is a better interpretation of the word, translation of the word. You have to endure hardship as training. Yeah, sometimes you mess up, and sometimes it is discipline. But sometimes you didn't do anything wrong. Sometimes some evil person is doing something bad to you. But it's still training. You didn't do it wrong. It's a hardship. But it's going to help you somehow. But that's the thing. How is it going to help you? It's almost as if we're created for hardship. It's like that's the only way that we learn anything. The hard way. Even you look at Proverbs, as Solomon is writing to his kids, these same kids, Rehoboam and his other kids, you can almost get the sense of, in the beginning, like, okay, I know you're not going to listen to this, but here's the best way to live. If you happen to listen to this, even in Ecclesiastes, you get the same kind of underlying theme, I guess. If you look hard, you'll see it, that he's not really sure if it's going to work. But I'm going to tell you, and parents understand this. They're always trying to help their kids learn something without having to go through any sort of hardship. What does your thing say in your bathroom, Camille? This thing about life is... Yeah. It's like you learn I don't know, it's funny. I should have figured this out beforehand. Note to self. It just came to my mind. But she has this really interesting thing. It says, you know, you're supposed to be learning better. You're supposed to know more as an adult. Well, when is it supposed to start? So you're always trying to help your kids. And I even know, I understand what Solomon's going through. It's like, it's just like some things have to be learned through experience. And if we don't have those hardships, if we have no scarcity, we have all abundance, we have all of our needs met, and our parents, again, are always trying to make things better for their kids, easier for their kids, then you end up with this case where there are no hardships or very few hardships. And then what happens is you create hardships. You create your own hardships. It's just like the mouse utopia. I'm sure that's why they're eating each other. I mean, I don't know. I didn't ask them, but you should look it up. Just don't do it now, but do a Google search on Mouse Utopia. It's hilarious. Well, it's troubling, yes. Hilarious and troubling. Any rate, so if you don't have hardships, you create your own hardships. And self-created hardships are not very good ones. Because you're just trying to find something to do, trying to find something to learn. You don't even know why you're doing it. And I think that has a lot to do with, like, depression increasing and suicide increasing in our society. I think it has to do with people creating hardship for themselves. So we know that most of us, I would say, know that we learn from experience. But these hardships always, they're called a hardship. Because later on you look back and say, oh, wow, I learned this. But you know that at the time it was really hard. And those hard things, those troubling things that were part of the hardship, those don't just go away necessarily when you get older and you just have the good thing, the diamond in the rough. You still have the baggage. So there's this idea about embrace the baby, heal the bathwater. Now, if you know the cliche, don't throw the baby out with the bathwater. There's a whole etymology about that, but it's interesting. Look it up too. The idea, though, is there's something good, but it's amongst this cloudy water, and you could just flush it all down, but then you lose the baby. So you got to take the baby out and then flush out the bathwater. But the Bible, it probably does, but I don't see it very much. It doesn't talk about the healing that much. Maybe it's because they didn't have psychologists back then or something. I don't know. But they certainly didn't have massage chairs. But it talks a lot about this hardship, and it talks a lot about this idea that you're going to learn something good. But I don't see it talking a lot about the side effects, what to do with these negative side effects. I mean, it probably is the case that if you're really close with God, those negative side effects won't matter. You will see the diamond in the rough, and that's all that will matter. But for a lot of us, the case is that maybe you see the diamond, but you also see the rough. You're surrounded by it. It's still affecting you. It's still a baggage that's affecting you. And that's why I put the side effects of training. And that's where, especially nowadays, I think we have to learn how to heal those things. So you embrace, you identify and embrace the good things that happen with hardship, but you also then don't just throw away the rest of the bathwater. You try to get healed from that. And the question is, how do you do that? How do you get healed from these side effects? So my last point is, go on an adventure. 1 Timothy 4:8. For physical training is of some value, but godliness has value for all things, holding promise for both the present life and the life to come. I'm glad that this verse is in there, because it helps us know that exercise is a good thing. Otherwise, I don't know, if this verse wasn't there, you'd be like, I don't know, try to exercise, but it's not spiritual. There is some merit to physical training. If you think about how we have with our kids, trying to help them, you want to give them like hardships with as little side effects as possible. You want to have them learn something through experience without getting permanently damaged. And if you think about things like school, sports, jobs, public service, military service, those are all things that produce character, and they try to minimize the side effects. You know, with school, you have homework, you got these projects due. It does produce stress, right? And that's the type of hardship where when you get it done or you don't get it done, you learn. You learn from it and you move on. But we all know, you know, high school doesn't really mean anything, right? I mean, in the time you think it's everything. But afterwards, it's just the glory days, right? There aren't any like really bad consequences, even more and more so nowadays. And so that's why it's this artificial training. We're trying to help kids have these experiences so that they can forge their character without the possibility of getting killed. Sports are like that, right? It's too, right? It's like it's hard to get up early, it's hard to train, it's hard to go through all this training, it's hard to do those things. It does build character. And, you know, you might dislocate your shoulder or something like that or get a concussion, but hopefully you don't die. Nowadays, though, it's like we try to take the winning out of it, right? No, everybody wins. Everybody's a winner. See, that's going too far, and that's taking the hardship out of it. There's a hardship. There's a lesson that's learned when you lose or when you win. It's an easier lesson when you win. But it's probably a better lesson when you lose. So you take that out of it, and now you've missed the point of the whole training exercise. But I put here that God is the best provider of adventures. So school, sports, military service, training, those are good things. Those are little mini adventures you can go on. And when, you know, you think of adventure, you think of like climbing a mountain or something like that. That's good. Go climb a mountain. That's great. That will produce character. But God is the best provider of adventures. We won't read the whole story, but hopefully you know the story of Abraham and Isaac, how God called him to sacrifice his only son, even though he had promised that through his kids that the world would be changed, that nations would be made. And Abraham obeyed. He went up there, and he was about to sacrifice him, and then God's like, stop. Now I know that you love me. Now I know that you have faith in me. I mean, that's a serious training, right? I mean, that really showed Abraham what his character was like. He was really ready to do it. But, I mean, if that's the kind of training that somebody went on, you know, people would be like, that's way too far. That's the thing about God, is God knows our limits. That's why God is the best provider of adventures. We can endure more than we think we can. We are much more powerful than we know we are. And God knows those things. So when you go on adventures with God, you're going to get the best training. He's going to change your character the way he wants your character to be changed. And there will be those side effects. There will be negative side effects. But the diamond will really be a diamond. I think of like studying the Bible. That's one of the things that I love to do, studying the Bible with other people. It's things that our church likes to do. That's really an adventure. If you think of the word, if you're unfamiliar with like studying the Bible, and you just think of the general sense of studying the Bible, you think of sitting down and going over some verses. But it's not that. A real Bible study is about changing character. It's about going on an adventure with God. I think that we should call it exploring the Bible, or adventures in Bible studies, or something like that. Because it's not just learning some verses or memorizing a scripture or something like that. It's about way more than that. And whether you're the person who's doing the study or the person who's being studied with, it's an adventure. Yeah. And it changes you. Yeah. And that's an example. I think it's a good example. And it's an example that we could all do, even now, today. You could go on an adventure with God by studying the Bible, by learning what God has for your life, and talking about your experiences that you've had. You're talking about some of those hard times and getting healing from some of those hard times. I think about discipling. That's where two people get together who are Christians and talk about life. I think sometimes we think about discipling as, I got to confess my sin. If that's your discipling time, then it's like an iota of what it's supposed to be. And I don't think we take advantage of this opportunity that we have. It's really an opportunity to be able to go on an adventure and get help and ask questions and learn about your own character. You know how we're the worst person to see ourselves, to have somebody else take a look at us. I think that's another way that we can get help with the type of adventures that God wants us to go on. And so I guess in summary, what I'd say is, go on adventures. You are created for experience, for hardships. You are created for adventures. Yes, there will be hard times. Yes, there will be some negative side effects that you can get help with and healing. And really, that will end up being part of the whole experience itself. But don't try to live in comfort. Don't try to just take as much of the load off as possible, because it doesn't work out. You'll end up eating your roommate. All right. probably not the best thing to end on, but with that on mind, let's have communion. Let's go ahead and pray, okay? God, you are a great God. You are the creator of the best adventures. We look through the Bible and we see the hardships that your servants went through, but we also see the way you worked through them and changed them throughout their lives and forged their characters, Father. Help us to not just seek comfort, but to seek adventure and seek adventure in the Bible and seek adventure in our relationships as we connect with each other, Father, and the friends around us. God, thanks again for this communion. We see how you, your son, as you came to this earth, you learned things, Father, through your experience. And they were hard times as you died on the cross. But God, you did it for us, and we're grateful for it. Help us think about that as we take your communion. Pray in Jesus' name. Amen.